This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. How much should I be saving? What should I be investing in? What about life insurance? The questions about financial planning and how you deal with your money can be exasperating and stress-inducing. What if someone could ease your anxiety by telling you the truth about personal finance is much more about the personal side than the money side? That's the approach financial advisor and New York Times columnist Carl Richards takes in his new book. He joins us today to talk about the one-page financial plan, a simple way to be smart about your money. Carl, thanks for joining us today.
Mark, thanks for having me.
What inspired you? What compelled you to write this book?
Yeah, it's a kind of a funny story. I kept having the same repeated experience with people. People would find out what I do for work, and that maybe we would be, let's say we were at lunch. We'd have a great lunch and have a great conversation, and then the bill would come, and somebody would pay the bill, and it was clear we only had like 2 minutes left together, and they would say, "Hey, Carl, I've been meaning to ask you, what should I do about, and then they would insert a financial planning question, and I would think, we have 2 minutes, how am I going to, and I got so frustrated with that experience because I wanted to help, but I knew that the conversation was longer than that, so I thought, I'm going to start taking all those questions and try and come up with a really simple, direct answer, and hopefully that would be applicable, sort of give people the concept that they could apply to their own lives no matter what situation they were in. So that's where the book came from. Now I can just say, here, read this.
Anyway. Is it really possible, Carl, to create a one-page financial plan? Is it that simple?
Yeah, look, here's the interesting thing. When you go, it's not that all of your financial planning is going to fit on one page, right? It's when you go, let's say the best comparison I know is when you go to put together a toy for your child that's gotten rather complex, by the way, inside the box is normally a 60-page, instruction manual that most of us ignore. But it's terribly important, right? It's got valuable information in it. But the thing that's most valuable to me has always been the picture on the front of the box because it gives me some sense of whether I'm headed in the right direction. And that's all I'm saying is, look, at the end of the day, you've got this complex financial plan. We're all so frustrated with them. They usually serve as, doorstops or dust collectors. And I'm just saying, look, let's take that information and reduce what's important and sort of kind of actionable to you to a single page that's going to sort of be floating around in your desk. I mean, you're going to see it often. You're going to remind yourself. And really, this started from an experience my wife and I had we would make a financial decision, and then a couple months later, I'd find myself repeating the same sort of mental exercise of the decision. One time we wrote it down out of frustration with a Sharpie on a piece of paper, and my wife reminded me next time I went to make, a similar decision. She said, wait, we've already done that. Pull out that piece of paper. Started serving as a reminder for us. In fact, I have it here in front of me. So that's all I'm saying is let's get the important stuff, the top of mind stuff there so it can serve as kind of a reminder when we're thinking of doing something stupid.
Well, you're talking about sketches and pictures. They call you the sketch guy at the New York Times. I noticed you have a lot of sketches in the book. And what makes sketching so helpful when talking about personal finance?
Yeah, I have found, I think of these, they're just for your listeners who haven't seen them, they're hand-drawn images. I just draw them with a Sharpie. So they're, they can't get a whole lot of detail with a Sharpie on a piece of cardstock. I have found that when I force myself to figure out if I were going to take this concept we're talking about, it may feel kind of messy and complex, but if I were to take this concept and have to reduce it to one image on a piece of, on a napkin with a Sharpie, what would I do? And until I can get there, I haven't arrived yet. And so I think of them as either a shortcut to the idea or a souvenir of the learning experience we just had. Either way, I think they're sort of really valuable in terms of making the learning experience a lot easier.
Now, you talk about personal finance being more about the personal than the financial. Can you explain how placing it on that personal level is beneficial?
Yeah, and first of all, I need to make sure everybody knows my friend Tim Maurer, that's like sort of his famous tagline, is, which I thought was so brilliant, is personal finance is more personal than it is finance. And it's really, really true. Tim hit the nail on the head. Yeah, the nail on the head. in the sense that often we've got these concepts, right? And the concepts can be simple. Like, I'll give you an example, a diversification. Or how about this one? Spend less than you make, right? That's a simple concept.
Scary words to a lot of people, though.
Yeah, no, it is scary, right? But the application on a personal level can become a little bit more complex. Like, well, geez, that's easy for you to say, but how do I do it? And I think that's the thing that we need to remember is that, you know, it's personal to you. Your goals are not somebody else's. Like, stop living somebody else's life financially. Stop investing the way you hear, you know, David Swensen at Yale invest. Start investing the way that matches your goals. And until you get clear about your goals, that's really hard to do.
Now, why do you talk about the best way to start making a financial plan being to start by making some guesses? Doesn't that go completely outside the idea of most financial planning where you're dealing with a lot of facts and figures?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we, you know, it's a dirty little secret, right? Even when we call them forecasts or when we call them detailed analysis or when we call them assumptions, guess what they are? They're guesses anyway. And I have found there's this sense of anxiety when you sit down with somebody and say, all right, could you please tell me what your utility bills are going to be 27 years from now? Right? Like, and by the way, I need to know the day you're going to die because that's the end of our plan, right? Like, so we don't know. We don't know where we're going to be six
exactly.
months from now often. So to get rid of that sense of anxiety, I'm trying, like, often what happens is people just say, I don't know, so forget it. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just trying to introduce another idea, which is relax a little bit. Let's let go of that false sense of precision that comes up when we think of the word planning, and let's call it what it is. It's guesswork. So let's make the best guess we can. Like, hey, you know what? I think in 15 years I would like to be able to slow down a little bit, and instead of doing the job I have now, I'd like to go teach at the university. And I'd like to do that for another 10 years on a part-time basis. Okay, good guess. Do I know that that's true? Absolutely not. I mean, next year I may change it. So calling it a guess suggests to the mind that we're dealing with reality, first of all. It also allows us to relax a little bit, and it also gives us the permission to be committed to the process of guessing instead of committed to the guess, right? It's not something carved in stone in a monument now. It's just a guess, right? That's okay. It changed. Let's deal with reality. Let's move on and make another guess and keep moving forward.
So, Carl, what is the most important question that people can ask when it comes to planning their finances?
Well, this is going to sound crazy, Mark, and it sounds a little bit like a yoga class, but I think the most important question we can ask is why.
Okay, not who or what or how, but why.
No, but why? Like, we need to stop and just, and everything. I mean, that works on spending. Like, why am I spending this money the way I am, right? Is buying more unnecessary plastic crap really making me happy? But why am I investing the way I am, right? Like, that's a big one. Most of us couldn't explain that to our friends. Oh, I'm invested because some guy on TV said I should do it. No. So I think just asking ourselves why, in a non-judgmental way, like, this isn't a stick to beat yourself up with. It's just a tool for awareness. You start asking yourself why, behavioral change will come naturally because you'll start to notice things that are out of alignment with what you really feel like is important to you.
I'm talking with Carl Richards about his new book, The One-Page Financial Plan. And Carl, there are always formulas about how much you should save, what percentage you should save, that kind of thing. And it causes a lot of stress for people when they're doing their planning. How do you overcome that anxiety over how much you're saving?
Well, I think, right, if you've done the early work and gotten sort of clear about why you're doing things, you've maybe even spent some time tracking your spending, which sometimes we call the big B word, don't be scared. Sometimes we use the word budget, but we're not using a budget to beat ourselves up. We're using a budget to just become aware. So if we've done that early work, things will start to show up, right? And I love the idea to save as much as you reasonably can. Now, I know some people want more concrete, like, oh, I've got to save 10% of my income. But to me, that becomes a fear-based model, and maybe some of us need fear to motivate us. That's fine if you do. But to me, if we start saying, I'm going to save as much as I reasonably can, that's going to be different for each person. I mean, sometimes the answer, Mark, is you should stop saving right now and spend a little bit of money, right? Maybe you need an experience with your wife or your kids. Maybe you need to invest a little bit of money in the business you're starting. That doesn't feel like saving. And then the contrary might be true. Maybe you really need to buckle down and find a way to save a little bit more so you can meet those goals in the future.
Well, you mentioned that dreaded word, Carl, that comes up in financial planning, budgeting. And a lot of us struggle with that because it can be time consuming and it can even be overwhelming. So what advice do you have for people who struggle with budgeting?
Yeah, let's start really simple. I'll let you in on a little secret that I think will get you sort of 80% of the benefits of budgeting. Now, I'm not saying this is where you should stop. I'm saying this is where you should start. Just simply start in fact, let me get really specific. The credit card that you use for most of your discretionary spending, right, your optional spending, go on, log into your credit card account, and there's going to be a button. Normally it's under messages or alerts. And just simply check the box that sends you a text message every time you use that card. Okay, it sounds simple. Sometimes you have to trick it, but just send you a text message every time you use the card. Then just commit to me that you'll read the text message. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous. How could that possibly help? It's something I've been doing for the last 6 months. It's been amazing because the awareness I've had, because we all read text messages. I swipe my card, boom, a text message arrives. I look at it, and here's all I want you to say. I want your new favorite words to be, isn't that interesting? Don't beat yourself up. Just say, isn't that interesting? That's the beginning. Stop thinking of budgeting as a punishment, and that's the way we think of it. It's like, I'm going to put you on a budget. Think of budgeting instead. Shift your thinking a little bit and think of it as a tool for awareness. And that simple trick I just gave you, where you get the text message and you just say, isn't that interesting, will increase your awareness and it will grow. And then you'll say, you know, I wonder how much I spend on lunch every day. Oh, well, then you'll start tracking it. Oh, wow, we're getting really close to a budget now. And then you'll start saying, you know, I don't know that I need to spend that much on lunch because I'd love to save some of that so I can go on that trip I've been putting off. And you never even did it with any pain. You just started doing it with awareness instead of pain.
Carl, do you find it's the simple things, the things that often get overlooked because we think financial planning is such a complicated process, it's those simple things that really have the most impact?
For sure. And I don't know what it is about. Well, I do. I spent a lot of time thinking about this. I just think because something might be, okay, Mark, there's an important concept, I think. Don't confuse simple and easy. Okay, so just because something might be hard, we think it needs to be complex. That's just absolutely not true. You can have something be simple. Your financial planning should be simple. Now, I did not say easy. It might not be easy, but it should be simple. If you understand the difference between those two, I think you get a long ways in understanding, like, wait, if the concept's not simple enough, I haven't worked hard enough yet on it. I don't understand it yet. Somebody's not explaining it well enough. I need to understand it a little bit better until it gets to the point where I can feel like it's simple. Now, applying it in my life, actually doing it, might get a little messy because of the emotions. But it does not need, I'm begging your listeners to believe me, it does not need to be complex, despite what you may have been told for your whole life.
Now, one of the big questions of financial planning is, what should I invest my money in? And what's the most common misunderstanding about investing for the average American family?
Well, once we move beyond the idea that the common misunderstanding that it needs to be complex, which we already talked about, I think the next most common misunderstanding is that it might need to be exciting, you know, and I think that's a huge mistake. Investing done correctly is a lot like watching grass grow. I mean, it's really, really boring. You know, Warren Buffett has a great quote, like I can't even remember it exactly, but the concept is somebody's sitting in the shade of an oak tree because somebody else, you know, 60 years ago planted it. And that's a lot like investing, you know. So if it's exciting, you're doing it wrong. If it's entertaining, you're probably doing it wrong. Go to the movies instead. Your investing should be boring.
Watch the grass grow.
Yeah, paint dry, whatever you want.
Now, this can be a tricky one. What's the best way to have a conversation about money with your spouse or your kids?
Yeah, I think, look, any way you have a conversation about money is the best way, meaning just start doing it. We've all been taught money, sex, politics, and religion are those four things we've been trained never to talk about in polite company. And I think the first step is just start having it. But here's the big warning. Like, you just need to be prepared. We all feel like conversations about money should be sort of rational and about spreadsheets. We think money, calculator, spreadsheet, right? It should be rational. It's not going to be, right? Just prepare yourself. I almost feel like you should put a hat on that reminds you that money can be money is emotional. On a personal finance level, we're talking about goals and dreams, fears and worries, you know. So if you go into it prepared for that, you won't have the experience that most of us have of sort of feeling like you just walked into an electric fence that you didn't know was electric. Like, I just opened the credit card bill. Why are we fighting? So go into it, maybe have that conversation first. Hey, I want to start talking more about money. And now kids don't know this. Like, it's not emotional for them yet. So don't have this conversation with them, but with your spouse. But, you know, look, it might be emotional. So let's do it at a time when we have energy, not late at night when we're tired or hungry. Let's do it in a place that we've set aside. And if it gets emotional, let's agree to call a timeout and say, hey, we started, cool, we made it 3 minutes. Let's put this away for a couple of days and we'll revisit it.
Carl, you suggest hiring a real financial advisor. What do you mean by that?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I wish there was an easier answer. I just mean, like, there are a lot of fake ones out there who are just trying to sell product that their main goal at the center of their lives is either the revenue for the company they work for or their own personal income. Now, I'm not saying that there are financial planners out there that don't care about revenue. Of course they do. It's a business. But there are financial advisors, financial planners that put the client at the center. The product that they use, they just go out and select. They go out after getting to know the client. They go out and find the right product to use to help them solve their problem. They're not saying, I have a product, let me go find victims to sell it to. And the way to know the difference is if you get the sense of, like, somebody's trying to sell you a blue card and you don't like blue and they say, oh, that's okay, I've got green, you might be in the wrong spot, right? What you really want to feel like is somebody's taking the time to thoroughly get to know you, diagnose clearly your problems, and then they say something like, okay, I think I understand what you need. Let me go find the right tools to bear on this problem and present you with a plan.
After I've got that one-page financial plan in place, how do I avoid common financial mistakes?
Yeah, very carefully.
Proceed slowly.
Here's my hope. Like, that's the hardest part, right? The hardest part is putting the plan together, to be honest, isn't all that challenging. I mean, it can be, but it's a relatively simple process. Sticking with it is really hard. And so that's the goal, the ultimate goal, Mark, of the one-page financial plan, that sort of the stuff you write down on your one page, right? Of course, there's going to be all those other pages that have all the technical details, but the stuff you write down on your one page, the goal is for that to serve as a touchstone, if you will, something to remind you of what you said you wanted to do when you were thinking rationally. So you get excited about something. I want to invest in that business, or I want to buy Apple stock, or I think we should go buy a new car. You know, whatever it is, you pull out the plan and say, oh, that's right. That's right. That's what I really want to do. And it serves, that plan will serve as the, like Stephen Covey used to say, it'll serve as the deeper yes that will allow you to say no to stuff that comes up in the heat of the moment. So that's, I think, the only way I know to help people with their behavior is to come up with some way to remind them of what they said was important to them when they were thinking clearly.
Well, thank you, Carl. New York Times columnist and financial advisor Carl Richards. His new book is The One-Page Financial Plan, A Simple Way to Be Smart About Your Money.